Dick Gordon, this is The Connection. Parents have been arguing about the content of school textbooks for as long as most of us can remember. More often than not, it's a disagreement over science and religion. Even today, school boards are wrestling with how or if they should talk about creationism in the science textbook. Another front in the debate is what to say about contraception. Next year, when high school students in Texas open their health textbook to the chapter on contraception, there won't be any mention of birth control pills or condoms or IUDs. The Texas State Board of Education has approved only abstinence as a method of birth control that will actually be included in those books. Today we'll hear from people in Texas who like that idea and others who don't, and we'll check this against the rules of the First Amendment. We'd also like to hear from you. How much should the public school textbook conform to the interests or the beliefs of parents? Is it proper to leave out information that some people deem questionable? Or do you think that's a form of censorship? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And let's go straight to Texas, where we're talking, as I said, with people on both sides of the issue. We're going to start with Kathy Adams. Kathy's in Dallas. She is president of the Texas Eagle Forum and a supporter of abstinence-only education. Hi, Kathy.
Good morning, Dick. It's wonderful to be with you today.
Thanks for being with us. Why is it that you want just abstinence included in those textbooks?
Well, there's a bit of a misunderstanding there, actually. First of all, these are health textbooks, not sex education textbooks. And the teacher's editions do have more than just abstinence in them. It's the students' editions that have abstinence only. And that is because we want our children to know that that is the behavior that we do expect from them.
So that's not an education judgment. That's a moral judgment?
I think that this is education. I think that when you give children a mixed message, they don't know how to behave. But when you say to them that there is a very clear message here, we expect you to abstain from sexual activity until you are married, and that is the will of the state legislature in Texas as of a law in 1995, then we have seen that this is working. Children believe not a mixed message, but a very direct message that directive abstinence is the best for their health, not only physically, but also morally and socially. And when they believe that, then all the way around, everyone proffers.
What's your concern, Kathy, with putting in information about birth control pills or condoms in the textbook? What's your worry about that?
Well, first of all, that is a decision that is going to be made at the local level. When you put teachers and parents, administrators, school boards together, and they decide at the local level, which is the way it is done in Texas, how much that information is going to be acceptable in their community, mm-hmm. the teachers' editions have that kind of information. And if that community wants that information delivered to those children in the classrooms, then it will be. But the textbooks overall are teaching directive abstinence because it is best for the children's health.
Okay, this is where I need you to help me, because I can imagine a high school girl, young, confused, maybe taking her health textbook home to her bedroom and looking at it on her own time to try and figure out what contraception is all about. And what you're saying in that instance is you don't want her to have access to those other options, those other alternatives.
If the parents and the teachers, school boards, administrators agree together that they want more than directive abstinence taught to their children in that school district, then that's the way it will be. But that child is going to be given a very directive approach to sexual abstinence until marriage. That is the acceptable behavior that we do want you to hold to. And that girl is going to be given an extreme advantage as far as her health is concerned, as I say, not only physically, but also socially.
All right, Kathy, stay with me. I'd like to bring in another guest. Dan Quinn is standing by. He's Communication Director for the Texas Freedom Network. He's joining us this morning from Austin, Texas. Dan, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Are you opposed to teaching teenagers about abstinence?
Absolutely not. We agree with Kathy, actually, that abstinence is the best policy. That is the preferred behavior for all teens. I think every responsible adult will tell you the same thing. The problem is that that's just an incomplete that's incomplete information for kids. You know, I think parents know that making sure our kids have the most reliable and accurate information is the best protection we have for raising healthy, safe, responsible adults. They're not going to get it in these textbooks this time.
Okay, but Kathy's point is that that's up to the teacher, and that means that those sorts of decisions can be made and adjusted classroom to classroom, neighborhood to neighborhood. Isn't that a good way of doing it?
I think to some extent that's true. I mean, and the state law does allow great freedom to the local school districts to decide just what is the extent of the sex ed curriculum. And she's also correct that this is a health education class.
Mm-hmm.
But part of the health education curriculum, and this is a statewide curriculum, is that students be able to analyze the effectiveness and ineffectiveness of different barrier protection and contraceptive methods. That's just sort of basic, medically accurate information that's supposed to be in the books for kids to be able to use. That information now won't be in the books because there were, you know, some folks who objected to that basic information being in the textbook. This is not, you know, a very large or broad-based sex education curriculum that we're talking about. It's just some basic, medically accurate information that kids need.
And how far do you take this, Dan? I mean, what will or could or might happen if teenagers in Texas or anywhere don't get access to that information?
Well, it's important to know where we're at right now. I mean, Texas has the highest birth rate among teens age 15 to 17 in the nation right now. Nearly half of all new cases of sexually transmitted diseases occur among young people under the age of 25. And that includes about half of all new HIV cases. So we've been saying that essentially leaving this information out of the textbooks without giving some basic information about how to protect yourself from pregnancy or sexually transmitted disease is going to have very dangerous repercussions on down the road.
Okay. Without getting into the numbers, though, Kathy, because statistics get kind of lost on radio, just those questions mm-hmm. about birth rate or sexually transmitted disease, as even the concern about HIV, why not give the kids all the tools there the way that Dan's suggesting?
Well, actually, one of the changes that was recommended and accepted by the State Board of Education is an updated graph that does show, actually, the number of sexually transmitted diseases, which has grown just terribly over the last number of years. It used to be gonorrhea, syphilis, herpes. Now we've got dozens of sexually transmitted diseases. And that information is in the teacher's edition, and our point and our hope is that the teachers will tell children of all of the bad things that can happen to them if they do not abstain from having sex until they are married. As a matter of fact, the federal government even gives grants now to states who reduce the number of teenage pregnancies. And Texas has been one of the recipients. And that has all happened since our state legislators in 1995 decided that children should be taught directive abstinence. So it's working.
What happens if you get a situation where you're going to have a sexually active teen who's got a teacher who chooses not to talk about what's in the teacher's edition, who leaves it, you know, just what we're going with the textbook, and that's abstinence only then? I mean, do you see a downside there, Kathy, or not?
No, I really don't see a downside. I don't think, first of all, that condom use is rocket science. I don't think that it is something that has to be displayed and taught in a classroom for children to understand it or to have access to them. They're very, very easy to use as well mm-hmm. as to obtain for children of all ages. And so, no, we're not talking rocket science.
Charles Haynes is joining us from NPR in Washington, D.C. Charles is senior scholar with the First Amendment Center in Washington and is in charge of the center's programs in schools that deal with religion and public education. Charles, this is two sides of an argument that I guess you're quite familiar with.
I am indeed. This is a long-standing argument.
I'm wondering if there are any rules, any laws, anything that's specifically in the Constitution that gives direction to either side here.
I think it's more the spirit of the First Amendment than the legal implications, because after all, people on all sides are free to advance moral and religious reasons for what they do in public education. That's what America's all about. Now, the government, of course, or the public schools, are not free to impose a particular religious view. But of course, all decisions about sex education and health and so forth have religious and moral implications. And just because a particular approach in a textbook happens to be rooted in a religious conviction doesn't rule it out. It simply means that we have a debate I think that the First Amendment calls on us, however, to make sure that we have good civic or secular reasons for what we do in public education, mm-hmm. even though we may be motivated by our various religious and ideological beliefs. So that's the spirit of the First Amendment. It could go too far, but, you know, I mean, religion could be imposed in a textbook, but that's usually not the issue. The issue is how do we have, how do we base our decisions about what goes in those textbooks?
So in terms of trying to get some guidance, does that mean you're stuck with having to tease apart what's religiously motivated, what's secular, what's civic-minded, and what comes more from the church?
I think the onus is on the school board and school officials to look at the evidence. I mean, what do the studies say? Do they say that kids are benefited more by one approach or another? And there are different studies out there that people can look at. And sure, we're going to have a debate about what that means. I think overall, however, many of us who've dealt with the sex education and the abstinence issue for a long time, we believe that kids ought to have all of this framed by a moral discussion, a discussion about what is really ethical and moral in their lives. It's a character issue. And then within that, decide how to inform them about what's available and so forth. I mean, one of the problems here is that we're in this kind of standoff because we don't really frame, I think, enough of what we do in schools in terms of what good character is and good citizenship is. And within that conversation, I think we can begin to figure out how much information kids at what age level they're going to need to be people of good character.
Okay, so within the moral framework that you're talking about, should that health textbook have the information about condoms? Should it have the information about birth control pills? What do you think?
Well, I think these are local decisions, but I would argue that in the spirit of the First Amendment, I think we need to let kids in on the controversy. We need to let kids, especially in high school, in on the implications of all this. Kids are going to get bad information elsewhere about contraception and other issues if they're not really allowed to understand the implications of it. I don't think information just should be given to kids about contraception without a moral framework. I think that they have to understand what the implications are for their lives when they make decisions. But to keep them out of the conversation by excluding some of those issues really will, I think, push them to get bad information and make bad choices.
Connection listeners, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Quite often when we talk about this push and pull between religion and the state, we're talking about much more easily identifiable issues like the court case that's underway right now in Georgia, where you have creationism and the sticker in the textbook and the science people saying that that shouldn't be there. In this Texas story, it's a little bit more complicated because we're talking about morals and ethics and local control and, principally, what should be in the textbook. That's where we'd like to hear from you. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Is the school textbook an opportunity to direct the children in the way that Kathy Adams is describing it, or is it a place where all the information should be put for a moral conversation that involves the teachers and the other students? What do you think? We're at 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection. I mentioned earlier in the program that next year, when high school students in Texas open their health textbook to the chapter on contraception, they will be reading only about abstinence. It is something that the Texas State Board of Education has approved, and our conversation revolves around what should be in that textbook. We'd like to hear from you. We're going to take our first call from Blackstone, Massachusetts, and Barbara's on the line. Hi, Barbara.
Good morning.
What do you think?
Well, my sister is an employee at a textbook company in Texas, and we were discussing this very issue last week. And we were talking about, we remember back when they first started teaching sex ed in schools, and the parents were screaming that, oh, it's not the school's responsibility, it's our responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems now that parents have abdicated that responsibility to the schools, but only if they teach what they want them to teach. I think it's important for my children to have all the information about, you know, issues considering the worldview, but they don't live in a vacuum, and I think it's my responsibility to say, well, yes, this is available or this is some people's opinion, but in our household, this isn't what we believe.
And so what do you want in the school textbook, Barbara?
I want my children to have all the information that they can have. They need that in the world today. But I think, as I said, it's my responsibility to say, this is what we believe and why. I don't think it's up to the schools to limit that information for other people who may not believe the same way we believe.
You know, this is a chance for me, Barbara. I want to thank you for your call to bring in Kenneth Miller, who's been listening along. He's a professor of biology at Brown University, and more notably, he is co-author of Biology. It's the leading book in the country available to high school students and published by Prentice Hall. Kenneth Miller, thanks for being with us.
Happy to be here.
I'm just curious to know from your perspective, who makes these decisions? Is it the authors of the book, people like you? Is it the publishing companies like those in Texas that do the publishing? Who decides what goes in the textbooks anyway?
Well, I think the answer to your question is yes. Who decides what goes into a book is really a multi-stage process. The authors, if you have a good publisher who is supportive of an author's vision, the authors will make that decision, and they'll make it hopefully with good, in my case, since I write science textbooks, good scientific judgment. What's interesting, however, some of your listeners may know this, but some may not, is the way the marketplace works. Of the 50 American states, 21 of them are what publishers call adoption states. And that means that in those states, the state government, not the local board of education, buys all the textbooks. And that gives the state government, Texas is the example that you've heard a lot of influence over what goes in those books. So what happens in Texas, and you've heard about that process, is from my point of view, and I've participated in this process three times now, wonderfully democratic. And what I mean by that is literally anybody in the state who's interested in having their two cents in terms of what goes in a textbook or what ought to go in the textbook can come to Austin, participate in the public hearing, and try to influence the elected state board of education. That's what happens in 21 states. In the other 29 states, they pretty much leave it to the free market. Here in Massachusetts, for example, every board of education in every district has to get their own money together to buy textbooks. So they decide from year to year, do we want to buy physics, do we want to buy French, do we want to buy U.S. history? So those states are ones in which they simply let the free market operate, and states aren't in the business of approving books.
Which one is the best one? Which one gives the students the information that you as an author think ought to be in the textbook?
That's a difficult question to answer because it's like asking which of your two kids do you like the best? What happens in a state like Texas is, as I say, the process is wonderfully democratic. And, Churchill, that famous quote, democracy, the worst form of government except for all the others. It means that the process is open and it's above board and everybody can participate. But it also means that the content is liable to be influenced by political pressure groups. Now, you've mostly heard today about political pressure groups on the right, but there also are political pressure groups on the left. In the open market states, mostly the northern states, it's basically the free market is left alone. So ironically, states that we associate with conservatism, and Texas is an example of that, rely on government to dictate content in a political process. And the states that we normally associate with the left wing of the spectrum allow the free market to dictate, meaning the individual choices of individual local officials.
Okay, Kenneth, just hold on for a minute. I want to go back to Dan Quinn, who's with the Texas Freedom Network and has some reservations about this abstinence only in the health textbook, because what Professor Miller's saying, Dan, is that people in Texas get to decide what's going in those textbooks, so what's the quarrel with that democratic approach?
Well, actually, the adoption of the health textbooks this year is kind of a product of decades of censorship efforts by a number of groups who just don't like certain information in the textbooks and they want it to be removed. Last year, there was a battle over watering down the discussion of evolution in biology textbooks. In 2002, there was a during the social studies adoption, there were efforts to remove information in those textbooks that certain groups opposed. For example, references to ice ages millions of years ago were changed to in the distant past because millions of years ago conflicted with biblical timelines, and some folks were upset that the textbooks would do that. This has been going on in environmental science and language arts. The health adoption 10 years ago was particularly contentious over very much the same sorts of issues we have today. And I think what's happened is publishers have just grown weary of the battle from year after year after year of putting good textbooks into this state and then finding them challenged before the state board year after year after year, and then having to make very expensive changes to get them adopted.
So they end up mushy?
Well, this year they just censored their health textbooks before they even delivered them to the state for review, even though the state curriculum mandated this basic information about family planning and disease prevention in the textbooks. It just wasn't there at all.
Kenneth Miller, just a quick last question to you, and that is whether or not you think the country would be better off if there were national standards for what went in textbooks like these.
Well, let me respond very quickly to what the representative of the Texas Freedom Network said. First of all, he's absolutely right. And last year, when our textbook, the textbook I co-authored, went into Texas and got the majority of adoptions in state high schools, there was a concerted effort to dilute and water down and, in some cases, even strike the teaching of evolution in those textbooks. And that effort had to be opposed, a great effort, by authors like myself. I wrote one position paper after another, and especially by the biology teachers of the state of Texas, who organized and showed up en masse at the state hearings. And the board had to sit there and listen to one teacher after another saying, don't take evolution out of these books. So it has become a political process, and he's quite right about the efforts to censor it. When I said it was wonderfully democratic, what I meant by that is all the good things and all the bad things that go along with democracy, including the work of organized groups to try to censor textbooks.
Kenneth, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Ken Miller is professor of biology at Brown University and co-author of that high school textbook, Biology. Kathy Adams, just a chance to hear from you. When you have so many people saying this should be in and this should be out, isn't there a chance that you end up with something that's kind of gray and mushy and horribly safe?
Absolutely not. As a matter of fact, even on the evolution battle, I think that it's been mischaracterized what the attempts were being presented. What we were trying to do was insist that the strengths and weaknesses of evolution be presented, as well as creation. And so if you're going to be presenting the strengths and weaknesses of both sides, then my goodness, how can that do anything but cause a child to think, and certainly not to offend anyone or any religion.
But I can use that both sides argument to say you ought to have put birth control pills in the health textbook, no?
Well, again, we're talking about health textbooks and not sex education books, and we're talking about local control. All of the bases are covered. And if we have the strengths and weaknesses, we have an even hand, we have parents being involved as well as teachers who are trained to do a job, then everyone is happy. And the democratic process, as has been so well explained, I think, by Dr. Miller, is working in the state of Texas, and we are most happy about it.
Charles Haynes, back with the First Amendment Center. Where's this all leading us as people all want to have their input into how the issues of health and issues of science and religion are described in the textbooks?
Well, democracy is a great thing if it's working properly, but I think it's broken. And I think we're in a mess, frankly, when it comes to textbooks. These top-down states have too much power. They do drive the market. And these other states, you know, they say, we have lots of choices, but what do they have? They have a few textbook companies left standing after all of this, this fighting, watering down, really censoring. I mean, our textbooks have become very poor educational instruments because of all of this. So, yeah, I think that the top-down issue is a key issue here. I think our textbook choices are too limited, and I think that the politicalization of this selection process means that a few people who bang the drum the loudest are going to get their way and really determine things for everyone else.
Now, just to be clear, if I can here, when you're talking about the states that have the power to produce the textbooks, you're making the point, I think, that what's published in Texas is likely to wind up being the classroom textbook in Louisiana and Oklahoma and in New Mexico and in smaller states that may not have their own publishing?
Oh, absolutely. I review textbooks quite a bit, and I can tell you that when the big states speak, everybody else has to listen. And the textbook publishers are very nervous about anything in the textbooks that's going to be controversial, it's going to cause a fight. Well, that's not democracy. I think if we really did have more local control and states really did have let their districts choose textbooks, we'd probably have a lot more textbooks in the market with a lot more options in them. So I think it's not quite accurate to say that this is all working democratically. It's a tough process, the selection process, and to really have a voice in it, you have to spend time and money and effort, and usually it's just a small number of people who are able to have that voice.
We're at 1-800-423-8255 and talking about what goes in and what's taken out of school textbooks this hour. To Raleigh, North Carolina for our next call, and it's Brian on the line. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine.
It seems fair to allow parents and teachers to decide what content of the curriculum is taught in a particular district. However, it doesn't seem likely that that decision is made unanimously. So how, therefore, is it fair for the parents and teachers in the minority? I mean, if at least one parent wants contraception taught, why should the majority get to impose their views?
Dan Quinn, do you want to talk to Brian on that one?
Actually, that one parent wouldn't be alone. Polling has shown very clearly that the vast majority of parents do believe that students should be taught about abstinence and contraception and barrier protection or protection from sexually transmitted diseases. A recent poll in Texas by Scripps Howard, a respected polling firm that's been polling here for years, showed that 90% of Texans supported that. A Zogby poll in December of 2003 showed 3 out of 4 Americans thought the same thing. So that parent wouldn't be alone. So there is a problem here. If we're getting textbooks that don't have the information that the vast majority of parents know is the best for their kids.
Let me just go back to Brian and Raleigh. How would you have these sorts of things decided, Brian?
Well, it seems like, you know, inclusion in a public school would be better than omission. I agree with the caller from Massachusetts. You know, it seems like if at least one parent wants it in there, it should be in there. And Kathy, you know, I think she was a little hypocritical when she said that both evolution and creationism should be in there, but both contraception and abstinence shouldn't be in there.
Kathy, you want to talk to Brian here?
Yes. Thank you, Brian, for your comments. Actually, we're talking about a health textbook, Brian, not a sex education textbook. And we're also talking about a decision that will be made at the local level. And I think the bottom line cannot be overlooked, and that is that Texas has been granted a federal grant because we have reduced the number of teenage pregnancies. So what we're doing is working, and that has been recognized even by the federal government in the form of a grant. And that is a result of a 1995 Texas law that says that children should be taught first and foremost directive abstinence.
You're listening to The Connection. My name is Dick Gordon. I want to go to Charles Haynes just on this. I can see you getting completely lost on trying to make decisions either based on polls or based on statistics about birth rates going up and down as a way of making decisions. What goes into the textbook? What can you work with here? Do you see what I'm getting at?
I think the first thing to say is that there are winners and losers in a democracy, and these are the kinds of decisions that are going to be made through the democratic process. The school boards are elected and state boards are elected to make these decisions. My concern is that they're often making these decisions without really looking at all of the data they need to know, the scientific evidence, whether it's the creation evolution issue or whether it's the health issue. I mean, it seems to me that, for example, this is a health issue. It's a health issue if kids are going to go out and find out about condoms on their own and not know that they could get diseases even though they're using condoms. They need to be alerted to the implications, the practical implications, as well as the moral implications of making those choices. What does that do for their life? So the democratic process can work, but it has to be done in a way that is open, that is really inclusive, that gives people a real voice and opportunity. We can't just give this over. In Texas for many years, the Gablers, a couple in Texas, you know, pretty much had veto power over a lot of went into in textbooks. We know this. I mean, a few people who pay attention to this have a bigger voice, and that's just not right.
And Kathy, you come back to the point several times that it's a health textbook. Is there reference in that textbook to AIDS, to sexually transmitted diseases?
Yes, and all of this is, again, saying that the only way to absolutely avoid AIDS and sexually transmitted diseases, as well as pregnancies, is through the teaching of directive abstinence. And as I say, the children are listening to this message. They understand it because there is not a mixed message being presented to them. But I would absolutely think that every teacher is going to look at their manual, their own text, and they are going to be presenting how many times the condom does not work and how many diseases
is if they choose to talk about it, though. I mean, that's the teacher's choice.
And it is the teachers and the parents at the local level who will be making that decision. And I absolutely do believe that will be done.
All right, let's go back to our
callers. We have elected people who are accountable to the voters.
To Raleigh, North Carolina again. Michelle's joining us on the line. Hi, Michelle.
Hey, good morning.
So what do you think?
Well, I absolutely disagree and have disagreed with this abstinence only as being taught either in sex education courses or in health education. I would like to remind Kathy that healthy choices also include choices that we make towards sex, whether to have or not to have. I'm a physician and a parent, and I take care of people infected with HIV and AIDS. When I talk to the young people, particularly the college-age people, their lack of knowledge and lack of understanding about the importance not only of abstinence, but if you decide not to abstain, how to protect yourself from disease is paramount. So these young people are in colleges, and I'm sure everybody's well aware of the data that shows a rise in the increase of HIV-infected college individuals are out here not knowing all the information.
Michelle, we're going to have to take a break in just a minute, but I do want to ask you before we go how you think that information is best given to the students, the way that Kathy's saying, from the teachers, from the parents, or in the book?
Okay.
No, how would you have that information given to the student, Michelle?
I don't think there's a problem with having a combination of both. As a parent, we have books at home that show anatomy, and I talk to my children about the importance of abstinence, but also of knowing their bodies. There are teachers, health professionals, who are trained, very well educated, in how to approach this subject with children, and I think they're doing a fantastic job.
Michelle, I have to let you go there. We're going to take a short break, come back, take more calls, talk a little bit further about who decides what goes into a health high school textbook, and what the effect is on the kids who are reading it. We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's the number that you can use to join our conversation this hour about what goes into the high school health textbook. We're already hearing about how the Texas high school health textbook is going to talk just about abstinence when it gets to that chapter on contraception. And we've got Kathy Adams, who's head of the Texas Eagle Forum, with us explaining why she thinks that's a good idea. Dan Quinn is with the Texas Freedom Network explaining why he disagrees with it. And Charles Haynes is with the First Amendment Center in Washington, D.C., giving us something of an overview. Dan Quinn, if you were to change the system and have the textbooks written or prepared in a different way, what would you change?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, there are a lot of arguments on both sides whether or not there should be a centralized adoption process. It certainly does open up the adoption of textbooks to political manipulation, which we've seen over and over again. On the other hand, I think it's very important that parents, that taxpayers in general, have a say in what's being taught in the schools. What I don't think should happen is a small core group of censors essentially controlling the process year after year. One way that we could get around some of this is to allow experts to review these textbooks rather than just lay people, lawyers, you know, teachers, people who maybe are not particularly health experts, for example, who look at these textbooks and then give an advisory opinion to a politically elected body like the State Board of Education.
Some kind of expert review, Kathy. Could you go along with something like that?
Well, I think that Kenneth Miller was talking about the process and participating in the process with Prentice Hall in the state of Texas, and he said that the science teachers were the ones who came out in mass and organized in order to talk about an even-handed approach, displaying the strengths and weaknesses of evolution and creation.
Let's stick to contraception, because that's the one that we're talking about here, just in terms of whether or not
right.
you'd sort of say, yeah, okay, if there was a panel of experts that went over the textbook, I'd be willing to go with what they say.
Well, I don't think that there is a greater authority than a parent. That parent has a responsibility to train up their children that surpasses any other, whether it be a teacher or whomever.
I mean, I get that responsibility at home without a moment's hesitation, but I also am hearing from Dan and from Charles that you can get these groups of parents, may not be representing everybody, who have the time and the wherewithal and the energy to say, this is what we want in the textbook. And that's in part, it seems to me, Kathy, where we get into a disagreement over this, no?
Well, I don't think that there is an imbalance of those persons. Certainly, the process is open to all persons to participate. And I have not seen or heard an imbalance of those. I think everyone should be allowed to come to the table who has an interest, and certainly those who are teachers, but not with greater authority than those who are parents.
To that Virginia Beach, Virginia calling. Next. Excuse me, Kathy. I want to go to Sarah, who's joining us on the line from Virginia Beach. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. What do you think?
Actually, I just wanted to say, when I was 5 years old, my mother had exposed me to sex education, and she also had taken me to the medical museum at the Walter Reed Hospital. I was able to see the different ailments associated with unprotected sex. And I also know that when you are teaching children to make informed decisions about their bodies, you empower them. I became more empowered when I was in high school, and I was clearly able to make positive decisions. And now at 28, I'm still a virgin. So that just kind of, you know, solidifies the base that when you're able to make those decisions for yourself, you know what's right for you. And I don't think that Kathy is giving the high school students enough credit to make those decisions for themselves. Most of the time when we were exposed to sex education, I know that we were able to see that, you know, we didn't want to have, you know, all that adult matter to come and manipulate within our lives. So we just kind of decided that, you know, this is what we want to do for ourselves, make positive choices and say, you know, stand up for those choices.
Kathy, what about that, making those choices based on the information that Sarah said that she had and she thinks perhaps other students should have as well?
Well, I think we all owe Sarah kudos for making all those, excuse me, right choices. And I would challenge any parent or student in the state of Texas that the children in Texas are going to be given lesser information. I think they're going to be given all of the same information, Sarah. I just think that who it's coming from, parents and teachers, is going to be much more powerful than the students sharing among themselves. The information is there, and this is a health textbook. Even looking internationally at the pandemic of AIDS in Africa, what is working there is a message of directive abstinence and staying faithful within your marriage. I mean, this is not just a Texas issue. This is an international issue. It's working. The information is there. It's accessible easily to each and every student. But the authority, the greater authority and responsibility is still with those teachers and with the parents, and that's where it should be.
Well, it's important to note here, by the way, that the programs in Africa are not actually just abstinence only. They do include discussions about condoms as well, and that's been an important component to getting the AIDS epidemic under control in some countries, or at least to stabilize it in some way. The other key point here is, I think your caller's right, ignorance won't protect anybody, and it especially doesn't protect our kids. What we have is a textbook that kids will now be relying on for the next 10 years, 4 million Texas kids. That will have no information in there about how to protect themselves from a sexually transmitted disease or from an unintended pregnancy. And that's just really irresponsible. To say that the information's there is just really not accurate. There will be some small bits of information in the teacher's edition. But, you know, when I was in school, I didn't have access to the teacher's edition. I had a student's edition. This is a statewide curriculum. If it's important enough to be in the curriculum, it's important enough to be in the student's edition.
And may I add that many teachers are not prepared to address moral and character issues. And I think that's a very big problem in teacher education. I think they need to be prepared, because if we're going to leave it more to the teachers, a lot of parents have abdicated their responsibility in this area, and we have a lot of kids getting into trouble. But if we're going to leave it more to the teachers, we need to prepare them to frame this information in character terms, in terms that serve our country, that are good citizenship. These kinds of issues have to be back on the table. So it's, to me, giving information is not enough. It has to be framed properly. It has to be in a moral conversation that serves our wider interest in the nation. Kids can be brought into this conversation, but it has to be done in a way that will help us to help them make the best decisions.
All right. Next call from Charlottesville, Virginia. And Nick's on the line. Hi, Nick.
Hey, good morning to you.
What do you think?
I just had an observation that Kathy has made a point repeatedly that these are scientific textbooks, and in her opinion, contraception doesn't pay.
No, she's talking about them as health textbooks, let's be clear.
Health textbooks, my apologies. And that, therefore, contraception or contraceptive devices don't have a role in those books. And I think if that's fair for contraceptive devices, it's also fair for abstinence, since that's a moral judgment as opposed to as a scientific judgment. That's all I had to say.
Let's take that one step further, because if we go back to the beginning of the program, somebody was making the observation that years ago, sex education was something that wasn't even taught in schools. And if there can't be some kind of agreement over what is in that chapter on contraception, I'm wondering, Kathy, if we should just take sex education completely out of the schools, not try and pretend that you're giving all the information or just one part of the information, and say, you know what, parents, it's up to you. We can't resolve this in the schools. And that would mean that the chapter on abstinence is pulled out of the textbook as well. What would you think?
Well, I wouldn't think that that would be healthy. And I also think that the framework that Charles Haines has talked about repeatedly is very well taken. We've got to have a character education. Children need to know not a mixed message, but a very clear message of what is moral, what is ethical. And we need to have, as he has said, civil reasons. We need to have studies. We need to have evidence. All of that is in place. And that's why in Texas, our elected state board of education, listening to the parents and to the teachers, the experts on these issues, have made a very clear decision that directive abstinence is what students would be taught, that teachers would have access to all the rest of the information, and at the local level, those would be available. And I think that we have a very healthy situation with all participating, and I think that the biggest benefactors are going to be our teenagers.
You're listening to The Connection. My name's Dick Gordon. Charles Haines, how do you decide what goes in and what doesn't? What's moral, what's ethical, what's fact, what's science, what's health, what comes in or is taken out as a result of the influence of parents or teachers or local politicians? Is there a way that this can work?
I think the place to begin is where we agree. And I think that in a local community, as well as on a state level, there's wide agreement on the core moral values that we want to teach and model in our public schools. I think if we start with that moral agreement on honesty and respect and those kinds of values that most Americans really want our schools to stand for, if we start there, then we can move on to where we disagree and say, how are we going to raise moral issues where we are debating in our country? It also has to be age appropriate. There may be some things that younger kids don't need to know about or not ready to know about that older kids may need to know about. But again, if they're going to know about it, whether it's through the teacher and parents or in the textbook, either way, it has to be framed in a way that has some ethical or moral basis to it. Because we have a civic responsibility in public education to prepare people to be good citizens, not just to be people who read and write. They've also got to make good choices in their lives. And so I think that there is a wide agreement on all sides of this, mm-hmm. that we need to find some common ground on those moral issues, those moral values we agree on, and then look at how we deal with where we disagree.
But Dan Quinn, if that common ground can't be found, if there is at the end of all this some sort of fundamental moral disagreement about what should be included or excluded from a textbook, I'm not crazy about this idea, but I'm just wondering if it's the only way out, and that is just leave it completely out rather than saying, okay, we'll try and split hairs, or we'll try and answer the interests of these people and those at the same time.
Well, these are health textbooks. For a lot of these kids, this is going to be the last chance they're going to be able to learn this kind of information that's going to protect their health and their future. Some parents, unfortunately, are just not equipped to teach this kind of information. Parents are really good. They're the source for values, morals, teaching that kind of thing to their kids. Schools should be the source of factual information for the kids. At some point, kids are going to be thrown out in the wilderness of pop culture, you know, the internet, MTV. That's where they're going to get this information if it's not going to be in a classroom situation like in health class.
And we have been talking earlier in the program about national standards. Certainly No Child Left Behind, which is the leading education legislation from this administration, talks about having some kind of national standards. If there were national standards for what were to be in a health textbook and some of that information were included, Kathy, would it not be possible for then the teacher to simply say, here's what we're going to concentrate on, and that way the information is there and the local input is there at the same time?
Well, I would not support national standards. I think that the teachers have a very strong case that No Child Left Behind has created a lot of paperwork that they're unhappy with and a lot of federal regulation that they're unhappy with. I think that the same results that we're advocating, though, that the decisions be made at the local local level to keep control in the hands of the parents and the teachers is much better served through grants. When you achieve a certain goal, then the federal government says we're going to reward that. As in this case, with directive abstinence being taught in the state of Texas, according to state law since 1995, the federal government has said we approve of your results. And so, therefore, here is a federal grant.
Charles Haynes, I wonder if you're expecting many, many more disagreements to come up in places in the textbooks that we haven't even thought about yet, based on some of what we're hearing in this hour.
Sure, because public schools are really where we define the future of our nation. And that's why so much is at stake. That's why there are perennial battlegrounds on these kinds of issues. People do have a vested interest in how we shape our future citizens, their character, who they are, what they believe. So a lot's at stake.
And I thank you for being with us, Charles. It was good to have you on the program.
Thank you for having
Charles
me.
Charles Haynes, a senior scholar with the First Amendment Center in Washington, D.C. Kathy Adams, thanks for your time.
Thank you. It was wonderful being with you.
Kathy Adams is president of the Texas Eagle Forum. And Dan Quinn, appreciate you coming in as well.
Well, thank you for having me.
Dan Quinn is communications director for the Texas Freedom Network. And a little bit earlier in the program, we had a few words with Professor Kenneth Miller, who teaches biology and is a co-author of the high school biology textbook. Tara Murphy's our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.